The Changing Face of Doctor Who. The cover illustration portrays the 10th Doctor Who, whose appearance later changed after he absorbed a lethal amount of radiation to save the life of his friend, Wilfred Mott. He didn't want to go. Doctor Who, New Earth. Based on the BBC television adventure New Earth by Russell T. Davies. Written and read by Daniel Wormsley. Prologue. The voices it hears sometimes call it a lab rat. Nothing more than flesh, fit only for testing. The darkness is all it sees. Pain and despair are all it knows. What the flesh doesn't know is why it is damned to this infernal existence. If, indeed, it truly exists at all. For life in this cell of agony cannot truly be life. Can it? How the flesh knows that anything exists beyond its current vegetative state, it isn't quite sure, but it knows that it does. The voices who treat it speak of illness and wellness. They say it suffers for the greater good. But the greater good of what? The flesh doesn't know what that could mean. Nor is it sure whether these voices that speak of illness and wellness are even truly real. Nor indeed does it know why it is entrapped here, in this place that's green and cold and dark, so, so dark. It's the only place the flesh has ever known, from the very day it was born, and it's the only place it will ever know, until the day it dies. The flesh wonders briefly what that will be like. Real death coming. Then the pain breaks its thoughts once more, just as it has broken its body. The pain, the horror, the loneliness. The flesh hears itself screaming, though it knows no others will hear. There are no others. Are there? Something tells the flesh that there are. Perhaps the others are the voices it hears and the shadows it can see outside, if indeed there is such a thing as an outside. Though once again, something tells it that there is. There has to be an outside. Perhaps it's something the flesh vaguely remembers from long ago. Something it can almost recall. But just as the flesh feels like it does, the pain comes again. Again and again and again, and its thoughts are broken, and it knows only that it is worthless, trapped here in the dark, and the pain will not stop. The flesh wakes. It wakes and it calls, and gets no sympathy, no touch, no comfort. It isn't supposed to be here. It's impossible, completely impossible for it to be here. And yet, here it is. They haven't noticed the flesh is awake yet, that it's breathing and alive, and even able to move. The voices. The cats. Cat people. They are clueless for now, but the flesh knows it can't take much more. The gases and fluids inside the cell make it sick, violently ill, and it is forced to hold it all back lest they notice. Again and again and again as the cats come to look. Because they know. They aren't supposed to know. But they know. The flesh cannot get out. The glass door of the capsule and the tubes pumping through its body make that impossible, at least from the inside. Someone needs to let me out. But who? Who will find me? Who can possibly help? No one else knows about intensive care. No one but the cats. Intensive care. That's what the voices call this place. It's restricted, the flesh has heard them say. Deep underground, in the dark, far below the surface of a brave new world up above. All cocktails and glitter, the voices say. I need to go there. I need to get out. The flesh slams a fist against the glass, as it has done hundreds, no, thousands of times before. But it's no use. The thick glass will not break, no matter how hard and how often it strikes it. I need to get out. The flesh stiffens. Footsteps. Then the voices again, two of them, rattling through the darkness. Someone's coming.
It was having a perfectly normal blood wash,
one of them is saying.
And then all of a sudden, it started crying. It's this one.
The sound of a lock, of a latch lifting on the door. The hiss of pressurized gas from inside the capsule escaping into the open air. Shrill klaxons splitting the silence. And then two whiskered faces, cold and clinical, peering down at him. The flesh knows one of them to be the big nurse, the matron, her furry face smooth and calculated, sliding into view like a gust of cold. Its hands are diseased, weeping from the many pustules and boils that blister its skin. But still the flesh reaches out to her, to them both, rasping weakly from inside.
Please help me.
The cats stand watching as it begs.
Look at its eyes,
the first one whispers to the matron in tones of hushed awe.
So alive.
The matron nods, astonished.
Positively sparkling.
Please.
The flesh tries again, hands trembling, pathetically outstretched.
Stop the pain.
Again, they ignore it.
And speech,
exclaims the matron in surprise, her yellow eyes staring.
How can it even have a vocabulary?
A shrug from the other cat.
Well, Sister Corvin has written a thesis on the migration of sentience. She calls it the echo of life. It's well worth a read.
Help me.
And now the matron is grimacing, stepping away with a shudder of disgust.
I've seen enough, thank you.
The nurse beside her nods and promptly swings the door shut on the flesh and its pleas, leaving it in the dark once more.
Fourth time this year. If this happens again, we might have to review our brainstem policy.
And what should we do with the patient?
As their footsteps fade away, its mouth gasps and its beating heart clenches. For the flesh knows what comes next.
Standard procedure. Incinerate.
The order is dismissive, almost nonchalant, but it is obeyed without question. There is the inputting of a code on a computer terminal somewhere nearby, and a lever is slammed down. The green capsule flares white, and then the flesh feels the fire on its skin, and its entire world is fire and ash and pain. Real death. Coming at last. The man's terrible, agonized screams go unanswered, echoing through intensive care as the cats continue on their way. They don't even stay to watch him burn.